Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think we should start this one with Sphincter Says What?
Sphincter Says Pardon? Hello everyone, it's Daz here from Not Another Whiskey Podcast. Have you ever wanted to jump back and forward over the Highland and Lowland line? Do you tour whiskey regions on family holidays, dragging your screaming kids around 8 distillery tours a day just to get those distilleries bagged? Do you have a wee map of the regions on your fridge door with updated production volumes and OLAs so that you can region out your pals? Like Mitch, do you read the 1784 Wash Act before you go to bed every single night? It's quite romantic. Have you memorised the Highland and Lowland line? Here we go. Are you ready for this? Right. The line begins at the North Canal and runs along the southern foreshore of the Firth, Forth and Clyde to Greenock, and from there to Cardross Station, eastwards in a straight line to the summit of Earl's Seat in the Campsie Fells, and then eastwards in a straight line to the Wallace Monument, and from there eastwards along the line of the B998 and the A91 roads until the A91 meets the M90 road at Milnathort, and then along the M90 towards northwards until the Bridge of Erne, and then along the River Erne until its confluence with the River Tay, and then along the southern foreshore of that river and the Firth of Tay until it comes to the North Sea. There we go. How about that?
Give me a round of applause for that, mate. That was good effort. I think you're the first person to ever read that out loud on any kind of medium.
I think any medium that's intended for entertainment, I think you could be right. Yeah. I'll apologise for that. But if you haven't walked or cycled it by the end of this week, you really do have to ask yourself if you are even a whiskey fan. But that's what we're going to talk about today, Mitch. That's what this session is all about. We're going to look at Lowland distilleries, the overlooked region, probably the most overlooked region, and there's a few reasons, aren't there, why we shouldn't be overlooking this. And our pals at King's Barnes, who are a Lowland distillery, have very generously sponsored this episode. We are going up in the world, mate.
Mate, can you believe it? And this is a genuine sponsorship here. So thank you very much to King's Barnes for sponsoring us. This isn't like one of the made-up sponsors that we used to do back in the first couple of episodes here.
Oh, no.
But now I'm excited about this one, mate, because, you know, we both live in the Lowlands of Scotland, so I think we should be talking about it. And I think it's one of the most underrated whiskey regions out there. This episode, we're going to delve into a little bit of Lowland history, also touch on the regions of Scotland as well, and you know, see if they're still relevant within the modern day whiskey world with regards to flavor profiles and all that kind of stuff. As we mentioned, King's Barnes is the sponsor, so we do have Peter Holroyd, who is the manager of King's Barnes, and I sat down with him early in the week to do a little interview. Daz was meant to be there as well, but he was kind of busy. He's a busy boy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a jam-packed show, mate. So yeah, looking forward to this one. Excited about it.
Yeah, no, I'm buzzing about it. And like you, yeah, we are from the Lowland region. But I grew up in Fife, and with King's Barnes, I have a particular connection because my granddad was the Coast Guard in the East Nuke of Fife for many, many years. And they lived up Crail, Pitt and Weem, Anstruther. And I used to cycle along to King's Barnes before there was a distillery there. and goes to the beaches, because they've got beautiful beaches down there at King's Barnes. And I remember that very, very well as a young lad. So I was really excited to hear that King's Barnes was going to have a distillery. I felt that was something that was really, really exciting. And I've been to the distillery in the past, but I must go back with you. We should do a Mitch and Daz little road trip.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I've been there a few times. And the first time I went there, you're probably going to hate this story, Daz, because this is another like Mitch Freebie story. But I was just hanging out with some
buckle
mates.
Your seatbelts.
I was just hanging out with some mates, and we had a house just on the coast there. And I remember doing an Instagram, and then they messaged me saying like, "Oh, come along to the distillery." And that's I just jumped in the car, a couple of mates, and we got a wee free tour around there, which was very nice of them. So that was my first experience. At that point, I was living in the US, and I had no idea that there was any whiskey being made there. So it was a real surprise for me going through, you know.
No, definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to this one. But we have had a few requests, haven't we? And it's brilliant. Thank you so much to those that have sent us wee messages, given us an idea of the sort of stuff that you want us to talk about, or you want us to bring people in to hear a little bit more about. And Chris Williams had asked if we would ever have a Cooper come in. And I immediately tagged in my most qualified Cooper friend, who is Stuart McPherson, who is the master of wood at Edrington, and obviously does a lot of work on Macallan. I've been to Jerez a number of times with Stuart over there, out on the hunt for good sherry casks, and also on the hunt for just a few sherries to enjoy and sit back and take it all in with. So I'm hoping all going well, and I'm not promising this, but I'm hoping our good friend Stuart McPherson might be able to join us, because he is a Cooper, was a Cooper by trade. He then moved on and became the kind of head guy for Edrington on the wood supply for their lovely sherry casks.
Brilliant, mate. Yeah, it's a good shout. And I'm good friends with Ian McDonald, who was head Cooper at Balvenie for 50 years. We could maybe get him on at the same time. They could have a Cooper off.
Oh, do you know what we should do with two Coopers? It's like celebrity death match, and get them to arm wrestle, right? Because every time you see these Coopers, they've got forearms like Popeye. Do you know what I mean?
Massive,
Well,
I love the story about Ian McDonald, because he's quite small, so they used to call him a Mini Cooper.
Brilliant.
He was a Mini Cooper S when he was younger, but because he's slowed down now, he got a little bit older, he's a Mini Cooper. So
we just called Stuart McPherson a lump of wood rather than the master of wood. Was it Infinity Bottlings, wasn't it, that somebody wanted to have a chat about as well?
Yeah, James wanted to chat about that. So let's chat about that quickly. I mean, you make a bottle, and well, you have an empty bottle, and you don't finish your bottle up or finish your bottle off. You pour it into that bottle and you keep doing that. There we go.
Yeah.
We've covered it off. Episode done. Yeah. Thanks, James.
Thanks, James. Good. Yeah, good idea, mate.
No, sorry, James. It's a good idea. I don't know how long we could do a whole episode on it. I've never done an infinity bottle before. Have you, Daz?
I have actually. Yeah. I used to just sort of put the last 25 or 50 mils of whatever I had knocking about. I used to just fire them into one bottle. I'd quite often enjoy it in a highball or something like that. You know. Yeah.
All right, man. So let's talk about what's been happening this week. What have you been up to?
Do you know, I had to go back through and go, what's been going on? Well, I told you, I was at SLTN, wasn't I? So I bumped into our good pal, Mr. Brendan McCarran, which was lovely. I've got a funny story about that, which I'll come back to. Nauticus, our pals down at Nauticus in Leith, they won Whiskey Bar of the Year. So congratulations to those guys. So the SLTN is the Scottish Licensed Trade News, for those of you who are not familiar with it. And they do an award ceremony. So it's probably the first big gathering for quite a long time for a lot of the hospitality guys, bar owners, operators and things like that. So it was a really, really good night. I think there'll be a few sore heads. This was on Thursday. So there would have been a few sore heads on Friday morning, that's for sure. And actually I was doing some filming as well, mate, with Mike McGinty from Bacardi. And they've got the Jewers malt. So we were actually tasting some nice Craig Ellicky's. We did the 12 and the 17. The 17 was really, really good, actually. And I didn't realise this, but they've actually redone Royal Bracla. That some of that sherry stuff from there is really good. Really, really good. And it's something that I don't think I've tried, certainly not in the recent past, you know, in the last 5 years or so. And we tried a wee Altmore as well, the 12-year-old, which is like classic Speyside, proper bursting with like apples and pears and little bits of vanilla and stuff like that. So that was pretty good. But mate, I've got a good story, right? So we're at SLTN Awards and I bumped into our good pal, Alan Gow. Alan is a guy that Mitch and I have worked with in the past, and he's a brilliant guy. He works in the soft drinks business, looks after London Essence, good mixers and things. So
it's just as well he's in soft drinks now. He was a danger when he was in booze.
He was absolutely hazardous human to be around. But anyway, so Alan's walking through the SLTN Awards. He's at the reception area or something like that. He's never met Brendan McCarron before, the master distiller for Distell. So he's walking past him and he's like, "Oh, Brendan." And so Brendan looks at him and goes, "Hi, mate, how you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, you're that guy from Daz and Mitch's podcast." And Brendan's like, I was on the podcast, that right? And it's like, that's brilliant that Brendan is now being recognised through our podcast rather than his role as the master distiller on some fairly significant malt whiskey brands.
You're welcome, Brendan. It's about time you got some recognition for someone.
It was a lot of fun. It was a good night. So yeah, what about you, man? What's been happening?
First thing I did was went out with my good friend, Greg Urquhart. So he invited me around to his house and he's got this amazing bar. It's basically, he's converted his shed into this bar. And he's got a sign on it saying, "No one leaves here sober." And that's exactly what happened that night. Mm-hmm. It was crazy, man. I mean, we were doing like espresso martinis with some Eagle Rare bourbon. Wow. We did some penicillins with some Ardbeg. Yeah, and a load of whiskeys, obviously. But and then we ended up, we went into town and we got into Gordon Ramsay's restaurant, even though it was opening night.
Oh, the Bread Street place. Yeah.
Yeah, we managed to get in there. I don't know how we ended up there, but we ended up there for the rest of the night. So that was a fun night, kind of a couple of days hangover after that one. I did a wee Glencadam and Tom and Tal tasting with Ian, which was really cool, just a little virtual one, which I introduced you to, Ian. So
you did. And today I got some lovely samples from Glencadam and Tom and Tal.
Nice.
So my friendship with you has finally started paying off, which is really good.
It's finally got you some free whiskey, mate. There you go.
Hey, I've only been waiting 15 years.
Yeah, but no, that was good. And they actually had the Tom and Tal cigar malt on that, which we talked about a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And then last night I hosted a tasting with Deval Gandhi from the Lakes and Pete Allison from Woven. So two of our good friends there. So that was really cool. Did that with the Larkfire guys. We had about 40, 50 people on the, again, virtual tasting, but really interesting juice. We went through some of the Woven stuff and Deval's new Sequoia Lakes whiskey, which is sensational.
Right.
And I also had a nice wee meetup and lunch with Charlie McLean.
Brilliant.
So I went up to his flat, had a couple of Negronis, and then we just went out to the Bailey down in Stockbridge, had a burger and a couple of beers, and then we discussed this podcast and he may be coming on the podcast. A little sneak peek for people there, but
how's he doing?
He's good, man. Yeah, always good. Yeah, good. So that's been my week. It's been crazy. All right, so anyway, this week we're going to be talking about the Lowland region of Scotland. So let's get into it. I thought we would start off, Daz, by doing some interesting facts.
Now it's time for some interesting whiskey facts that definitely won't get you any new friends on a Friday or Saturday night while standing in a bar. Might work on a Monday or Tuesday though.
All right, so interesting facts that will not get you any new friends. The Lowlands is actually the largest whiskey producing region in Scotland. So if anyone wants to shout out that Speyside is the biggest whiskey making region in Scotland, then yes, it is if you're talking about single malts. But when we bring grain whiskey into it, then Lowlands is king. So the Lowlands produces 408 million litres of whiskey per year, 386 million litres of that being grain whiskey, which is pretty incredible. Now, Daz, we're gonna cover this off a little bit later on, but you know, you think about in our Diageo days, we always just talked about two distilleries, right, in the Lowlands of Scotland, and that was it, making single malt Scotch whiskey. Now we have 16 single malt distilleries in the Lowlands, 5 grain distilleries. So in total, 21 distilleries in the Lowlands of Scotland.
That's it. And this is why I guess it's one of those when you think about it. And when we were just talking about, you know, what is the Lowlands an exciting enough region to have an episode on?
Well, we live actually, in it, so that makes it exciting.
Yeah, well, of course. But actually, it's arguably the most exciting for that reason. And the reason why is it's this tension between the fact that it's the largest whiskey-producing region, but it's also the least talked about. And that's something that I'm sure will change as more of these distilleries, which I'm sure you'll mention very shortly, start to produce great single malts, start to become renowned for, you know, their style, their house styles and things like that.
Well, let's talk about the distilleries we have here. Elsa Bay, Auchintoshan, The Borders, Inchderney, Bladnock, Ardross, Annandale, the Clydeside, Glasgow, Lindores Abbey, Holyrood, Arbeekie, Eden Mill, Daft Mill, Strathearn, Glenkinchie, and of course, our good friends at King's Barns.
So that's a lot of new distilleries,
a lot of new distilleries. And that's just the single malts there. So then when we move on to the grain distilleries, we've got North British, Cameron Bridge, Girvan, Strathclyde, and Starlaw.
And plans, was it Jackson as well? Grain distillery they've got plan and permission for down in the Borders.
That's right. I forgot about that.
And it's down that way. Yeah, they haven't broke ground yet. But we did talk about that very briefly, didn't we, in one of the other episodes? Yeah. The old stories always talk about the Lowland whiskies being triple distilled. And I can see why they might think that. It's proximity, perhaps, to Ireland and that lighter, grassier style, which there is a genuine reason for, which we'll come on to later on. But very few distilleries are triple distilled. Auchintoshan is one that's renowned for it. Glasgow Distillery, are they doing it all the time?
No, mate, they're just doing it. I don't know the percentage, but they just have a partly triple distilled distillation going on.
Yeah, Springbank have a triple distilled expression as well that they come out with. So there's a few distilleries doing it. There were more probably in the past, but double distillation is absolutely where people are at in general. But the Lowlands, I suppose, if you were to talk about them in general, they do have a lighter style. Triple distilled will give you that, but it's not a fact. Definitely not a fact that
Lowland
distilleries are triple distilled. Yeah.
So don't try and say that fact if you're trying to make some new friends.
Don't do that because you won't make any new friends.
Daz Mitch's Whiskey News of the Week.
All right, so what's been happening in the news? Well, I saw that Ardnahoe pulled its first legal whiskey out of cask, literally as it was legal. I don't know if you saw this, Daz, but they posted it on their Instagram page. It was cool. It had like a whole sort of procession almost with this cask from 2018. And as the clock struck 12, they pulled the whiskey out of it and they tasted it, which I thought was really cool to see. Cool. And we've chatted about Ardnahoe before on the show, beautiful distillery over there on Islay. So well done to them. Congratulations, guys, for legally having a whiskey now.
Yeah, very well done. Very well done. There's a thing called Copper Cairn. Is that
yes,
true?
Mate. Yes. I'm going to do a self plug for myself on the podcast here because I think actually I have made kind of history here with Copper Cairn doing the first ever whiskey retreat. So I've come up with this crazy idea and I'm going to be doing a whiskey retreat up in Speyside on June the 17th to the 20th. And it's going to be a 3-night, 4-day, all-inclusive experience. And I'm working with some good friends of mine, including an amazing chef in Edinburgh, Emma Hanley, who is now the head chef at Tattoo, which is an unbelievable Thai restaurant in Edinburgh. I'm working with Claire Martin, who you know, Daz. She's going to be the yoga instructor. And I'm working with my wife, who is, she does sound baths, she does Reiki. So what we're doing is we're bringing in this whole idea of a wellness retreat, but bringing in whiskey in there as well. So the whole idea is that it will be 3 nights, 4 days, staying up at the Craig Ellicky Lodge up in Speyside. There's only 10 places available. Everything is included, all your food, yoga, sound bath, whiskey dinners, distillery trips, all that kind of good stuff, transportation all around Speyside. So I'm really excited about hosting that and getting that on the go next year, mate. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Pernod Ricard have opened the Chuan Distillery in China, and that's big news. Mainland Chinese single malt distillery. Good pal of mine, a guy called Stephen Notman, who's lived out there for a very long time. He set up Whiskey L, which was the first sort of whiskey festival in mainland China back in 2009. And he's been working on this with Pernod to basically bring malt whiskey to mainland China. I've seen quite a lot of pictures of the distillery, and I don't know if you have, Mitch, but it's unbelievable. Beautiful setting, beautiful backdrop of mountains. It looks like a kind of place that would be a really lovely spot to go have a few drams. It looks like they've got it really nicely set up there for sort of drinking lounges and things like that as well. So, and then also on top of that is this one-of-one auction, which is being organized by Sotheby's. I just keep seeing another blockbuster after another blockbuster of bottlings that are going to be released for this particular event. And it's all for charitable causes. It's a massive, massive event. What's the date, Mitch? Is it the 4th of December?
I believe it's the 3rd of December. But yeah, absolutely stunning on this. I mean, it's great to see all the distilleries coming together, working together for this charitable cause. You know, they estimate they're going to get well over £1 million for this auction here. And looking at the lots, what have we got? I just took some notes on this before. So we've got 42 different lots from whiskies all around Scotland. And some incredible, I don't know what standouts there are for you, Daz, but for me, I think William Grant & Sons have gone way overboard on this. I mean, the ones they've put in there are absolutely unbelievable. They've got four bottles of Glenfiddich in this beautiful packaging. One is a 66-year-old. There's also a 64, a 63, and a 62-year-old in that, which is just insane. And they're beautiful-looking bottles. The other one that caught my eye is the Balvenie 65, I think it is, that they've got. But then the big one, and I think this is the showstopper for me anyway, is a Ladyburn that's the David Bailey's John Lennon bottle. I don't know if you saw that one, but it's
I saw their packaging. Bottle. Yeah,
like, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. I know that... I think Jonathan Driver is kind of leading this, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like the whole thing, I think he's kind of right at the front of it all. So it's good. It's great to see Grant's been so heavily involved, and congratulations to Jonathan for getting as far as he's got. Now, they haven't done the auction yet, but the bottles are being produced. A lot of them are already produced. I saw the Beaumont, was it a 51-year-old?
I was just going to say, yeah, the Beaumont Onyx, it's called. Yeah. It looks like it's landed from space, mate. It's unbelievable.
It actually does. It looks like a meteor. It looks beautiful, though. The whiskey is dark. It looks like your black Beaumont style stuff, you know. So that's really exciting. I actually saw a beautiful bottle as well from Glenturret, which was in Green Lalique, which I don't think they've ever done before, which is really cool. And that's a very sort of design orientated piece, and some lovely old whiskies within that crystal decanter as well. So
the other thing that caught my eye was the Lagavulin that's been produced for the Jazz Festival. Now, have you ever been over to the Jazz Festival, Daz?
I haven't, mate. No.
Jazz and Daz. It's like, meant to be.
The Daz Festival. What about
the
that?
Daz Festival, yeah. So the Jazz Festival over in Islay has been running for 22 years now, and Lagavulin has brought out a 22-year-old Lagavulin. All right, so in honour of Lagavulin doing this jazz bottling, I thought I'd read out their tasting notes in the description to some jazz. So this Lagavulin is matured in refill American and European oak, top dressed by active casks, some of them wine-seasoned. Lagavulin Jazz 2020 has a delightful, liquid, rewarding, and unusual mix of richness, fruitiness, and power on the palate. A full-bodied expression, it is extra smooth in texture with an intense, sweet, and smoky taste, and a gloriously long finish. It can be savoured at natural strength or with a drop of water. Was that, man?
Of that.
Jazzy, man.
It was really good, jazzy. Very jazzy.
That was like being in a jazz club.
It was, wasn't it? Get a smoke on. Delightful. Mm.
So region-wise, let's talk about regions. So when we talk about regions, we've got five whiskey-making regions, as I'm sure most people listening to our podcast knows that, and you're going to name them for us.
Islay, the Lowlands, the Highlands and Islands, Speyside and Campbelltown.
See, it's interesting, right? When Daz and I talk about this, we were quite involved in it with back in our Diageo days, because we were always talking about the classic six. Mm. Remember doing that, going around, and you know, yeah, we always had that plinth that we were putting everywhere, and they were talking about the six different single malts from Diageo. And obviously Campbelltown was always missed out of that region kind of conversation.
Did it drop out of the regions at one point?
It did, yeah, because it went down to two distilleries, and for a region, it has to have three distilleries. And that's why Glengyle came back in with Frank Hardy, mm-hmm, bringing that back in and rejuvenating that. That was a whole part of why that distillery came back again, was to rejuvenate that whole Campbelltown region.
Yeah. So this is the thing, isn't it? The whiskey regions are not hard and fast. And this is where I think we get, it's a great guide. That's what the regions are. And they were an indicator generally for styles of whiskey, I suppose. Now, to go and say the rules are a Highland whiskey must be made in this way or a Speyside whiskey must be made in this way is not true. It's not right either, because there are tons of examples of whiskies that don't exactly align with their particular region. There's also some subtleties within that. And the Campbelltown one's a good one, because it slipped out of the regions and then it came back in, or maybe it was never involved and then it came back in terms of being geographically recognised as a region by a body, shall we say. Speyside is a funny one, because so Macallan's a good example. Macallan, from memory, doesn't say Speyside on the bottle. Macallan is a Highland single malt whiskey, but Speyside is a sub-region of the Highland. So Speyside distilleries can carry the name Highland instead of Speyside, should they choose.
Indeed, mate. But I think, yeah, you know, it's when you look back on history, Speyside has got such a long history with that, with being associated, I suppose, with having top-class whiskies, that, yeah, most distilleries do want to put Speyside on the label. I mean, you know, for someone starting in whiskey, I always say Speyside is similar to the Cognac region in France when you're talking about, yeah, that, because not that any region has a better quality of whiskey, but you know, you look at the top selling single malts in the world, and I think it's now five of them are from the Speyside region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not a surprise. So to go back a little bit further then, so you talked about the classic malts, where we had the six malts from Diageo, who were using the regions to help people navigate a category as a marketing tool. And that was good. That was very clever. And it worked. Definitely worked. You know, I think people, when they tasted a Lagavulin, they felt that smoky whiskies were generally associated with Islay. Whiskies with a fuller body and a fuller flavor were typically associated with the Highlands. So Oban is a good example of that. And Speyside Craganmore is a good example of a Speyside. And Glenkinchie being light and easygoing, malty, not too heavy, good example of a Lowland if you were just generalize them. But it does go back a bit further than that. It actually goes back quite a lot further than that. And there was the Wash Act of 1784, which is really the first time that we see a clear use of terminology to describe Highlands and Lowlands whiskies. It was a system really that was put in place, not for flavor profiling or to help drinkers navigate the category. It was much more fundamental than that. It was actually a taxation thing, where the Lowland region was taxed very similarly to how it would be down south in England, whereas the Highlands were taxed very differently. And the implication that had was a very simple one. It meant that stills that in the Lowlands tended to be a lot bigger than they did in the Highlands. And the Highland distilleries, because they were taxed on the volume they produced, would would be taxed less. Therefore, they could run smaller operations, which generally were for local consumption, which wasn't always the case in the Lowland region.
I think it's interesting as well when you look at the amount of lost distilleries we have in the Lowlands of Scotland. And I'm lucky enough to live in between two of them, where I am over in Fife. One of them is the Grange over in Burnt Ireland, which still exists today, which I kind of went over there during lockdown, actually, and poked my my video camera around about, sent the drone up and took it right over what's still in existence of the Grange distillery. And the other one is Kennetpans, which is over in Clackmannanshire. And I think Kennetpans is one of the kind of stories that are not a lot of people know about, but it was actually the first real commercial distillery in Scotland that was making.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Whiskey, to a point, that the amount of tax that was paid on this whiskey was the same or a little bit more, I believe, than all of the land tax that was paid in Scotland at the time. So pretty incredible. And the history of that goes back to the 1700s. We kind of think that the distillery was up and running in a big way by 1730, and it was the Steens who started it all off. Really kind of clever family, and they married into the Haigs. So the Haigs and the Steens, who became this kind of powerhouse of Scotch whiskey making at the time. But what they did was, if anyone ever wants to go and visit Kennetpans, it's really interesting to see it. I don't recommend doing what I did, which was kind of jumped over the fence and got in trouble by the people that own it. But yeah, you can get a really good view of it. So where it's situated is, if you go along the coast, well, if you go west on the River Forth, or the Firth of Forth, you come to Clackmannanshire, and there's the Clackmannanshire Bridge. If you head north over that, you kind of look left and you see this old ruin of a distillery, and that is Kennetpans. A couple of firsts that happened in Kennetpans: it was the first ever distillery to have column distillation, we believe. And it was also the first distillery to have a steam train running to it as well. The Steen family were very clever in what they did, was because they had a fleet of 9 ships running from the distillery going all the way down to England. And this is where it kind of gets a little bit crazy, right? Because what you have to remember is, a lot of these distilleries, to your point, Daz, they had big stills. But the reason for that was because they were making so much liquid to then ship down to England eventually to be rectified into gin. And going back to regionality and why we have a particular or a set style of whiskey from these regions, one of those big reasons for that in the Lowlands is because of this. So bigger right. still produces a lighter spirit characteristic. That's what these guys were doing. But, you know, 1786, we have the Scottish Distillery Act, which came in, which imposed huge taxes on Scottish distillers, sending their spirit down to England, essentially making it a business that couldn't really succeed anymore. You know, these guys down in London got pissed off that when they were hearing that everything was brought from Scotland to be turned into gin, and they wanted to do it themselves. So that was a massive hit to the lowland whiskey making community, a really bad point in history for lowland whiskey distilling.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of distilleries in the lowlands, and you could kind of break them down into almost regions. You know, you've got Fife, you've got South Lowlands down into the borders, kind of northwest, northeast, and things like that. And yeah, you look at the list of distilleries that have gone, and there's tons of them, you know, and some of them have actually gone on to become very highly sought after. I'm thinking of distilleries like Little Mill, for example. Mm-hmm. Little Mill was an interesting one because it's literally on the canal. The distillery sits in the lowlands, but their water source is actually in the highlands. It's across the Highland line, which is quite cool. Rosebank, which will reopen very soon. Another distillery which is highly sought after, that's been away but it's going to come back. St. Magdalene as well, one of those distilleries that sort of springs to mind just as I'm sort of thinking through these different places. So yeah, it's Kennet Pan's a funny one though, because it shut in 1825, and that was when distilling was really kicking off again. You know, it's strange that distillery disappeared so early. And around that time.
I mean, it's not strange. They just absolutely got crushed because they were selling so much down to England. They couldn't do it anymore. So they didn't have a local market for it. It's, I mean, there's stories about the Steens actually trying to bribe excise officers.
So let me ask you a question then. What's your favourite lowland whiskey that you've ever tasted?
I don't know about the best tasting one I've ever had. The most valuable one I've ever had was the St. Magdalene that you mentioned earlier on from Linlithgow. Back in our Diageo days, I managed to get one of those from the shop. But I look at it now and I'm like, oh shit, I drank all that. That was crazy.
Yeah.
What about you?
There's been a few very old grains that I've enjoyed. We're talking about King's Barns today, and one of the best whiskies I tasted in lockdown was their distillery exclusive, which you can't get anymore. So this is not a shameless plug. The distillery reserve that went into port wine casks, I thought was sensational. I thought it was absolutely superb. It comes in at 59.8%. It's got this lovely reddy kind of color to it and tons of flavor. I think it's a six-year-old single malt. So yeah, I was really, really impressed with that.
And that other had a crazy color to it as well, right?
Yeah. Look at that. I mean, you can. Yeah. I'll put a picture up on the Instagram channel at Not Another Whiskey Podcast. See what I did there.
Well, it's a nice segue as well, Daz, because we are going to be doing a giveaway with King's Barns as well. So, guys, if you don't follow us already on Not Another Whiskey Podcast on Instagram, do it now. You've got a chance to win two bottles of King's Barns and a distillery visit for two they're giving away. And it's probably a good time to drop in this interview from Peter. Should we hear from him and hear what's all about?
I'm really, really interested to hear more from Peter because, as we said, you know, we know this area very well. I don't know enough about the distillery. I really don't. You know, I need to spend a little bit more time understanding what the vision was, you know, for King's Barns.
So this is Peter Holroyd from King's Barns Distillery. Peter, thank you so much for being on the show. Great to have you.
Hello, mate. Yeah, good to be here. Nice to see you again.
Again, indeed. I mean, you know, we were just chatting there last time. We had a chat. It was actually at the distillery, which was a lot nicer than the Zoom call right now. I think that was back in June. I remember it being kind of warm, but it wasn't really that nice a day. I think it was quite a bit of rain going on.
Yeah, I think my lasting memory of seeing you was sitting in some casks. Can't remember if we were having a dram or not, but we were certainly sitting on a bunch of casks outside.
Sitting on some casks, talking about yeast strains and all that kind of good stuff. And yeah, whatnot. Thanks again for being on the show, Peter. I know you're a busy man, so great to get you on here. You are the distillery manager at King's Barns. You're the head honcho, the main guy in charge here. So, you know, we're going to pick your brains a little bit on King's Barns today. And we've been talking already about this lowland style, or this lowland region, I should say, of Scotch whiskey that we have. And, you know, with King's Barns, I know you guys have always really kind of, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but fitted into that stereotype of what a lowland whiskey is with regards to the flavor profile that you're producing.
No, definitely. I mean, right from the off, the plan from the Weems family, our owners, has always been, let's target a lowland style, not only because that's kind of provenance and that's nice in terms of keeping it regional, but also because making a light, elegant, floral style of whiskey is going to mature a little bit faster than maybe a heavier, more oily Highland or even some of the Speysides are kind of more weighty in that regard. So it's to have a nice, light, elegant style of spirit means that you've got a little bit better chance of being able to put out some younger stock, you know, in the earlier days and be proud of it.
And I remember from previous chats, you talked about that light style, that fruity style comes from your long fermentation time, right? You guys, what is it? Correct me if I'm wrong here, 3 to 5 days, is that right?
That's exactly it. You were listening.
I was listening a little bit, yeah, mate. that's quite a good memory from the summer, you know? I've done a lot since the summer, so I'm surprised I did remember that there.
Yeah. No, that's bang on. Long fermentation times gives the yeast a bit more of a chance to give some fruity flavour. And of course, two different strains of yeast as well means that you've got each strain contributing a little bit something different to the mix.
Let's move away from the whiskey for just a second. Let's go back to you, because you've got a really interesting history when it comes to how you got to the position you are. I know you started there 2014, I think it was. So let's rewind. Let's tell everyone what you did previously to becoming the distillery manager at King's Barns.
So I was, well, I did the Heriot Watt Brewing Distilling course over in Edinburgh. So I did that for 4 years and really got into home brewing when I was doing that. So there's a little brewery on site there. And as part of the student projects, they get to make beers, beer and distill some stuff as well. They've got a tiny little still there as well. But it was fantastic because back then, you know, we kind of learned a lot about brewing through getting stuck in and doing it at home and making batches every week. So that was great fun. And then I really got into a proper production environment after that. I went to St. Austell's Brewery down in Cornwall for a summer and worked down there. And then I became the brewer, the head brewer for a tiny wee brewery outside of Glasgow called Straven Ales. And I did that for 4 years. Absolutely loved it. Helped make some recipes with them with a couple of different ales. And then in 2014, a wee change of tact into the distilling world. And I've been here ever since.
Amazing. And yeah, I suppose it makes sense for a brewer to go into whiskey, right? I mean, it's a natural progression, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, two of the guys that work in production here, both Gareth and Scott, they've both got brewing backgrounds as well. So, I'm not unique. there's a lot of similar processes up to a point, of course, until you fire all that fermentation into a still, then it's essentially the same process.
Absolutely. Man, I'm just thinking as well, that must have been hilarious for you back in your student days. You know, I can imagine the guy who's doing the accounting course, you know, being like, oh, yeah. And then along comes Peter with his beer that's been brewing up as part of the project. You must have been one of the most popular guys on campus, right?
Oh, it was brilliant. Aye, it was excellent. I mean, to be honest with you, we got pretty obsessed with it. At one stage, we were brewing almost every week and far too much beer.
Brilliant. So, since we're on the subject of beer, what's your favourite beer? What's your go-to?
Oh, no, man, that's a good question. It depends on the moment, what time of day it is and who you're with and what you're doing. After a shift here, I'll probably drink something lighter, maybe a Williams Brothers Pale Ale or... I play about with it a wee bit. I like saisons as well, once in a while. Sour beers, you know, proper funky.
You're going there, man. You're going there.
Bet fermentation, yeah.
You guys ever talked to any breweries about your casks being used for?
Not yet. No.
Be an interesting one for you, right?
Yeah. I know some distilleries have done that, haven't they? Is it Glenfiddich? Was it them that did the ale?
Yeah, it was an IPA with Glenfiddich.
IPA, that was it. Yeah. No, but we're not looking at that at the moment. We're sticking to our wood policy, which I'm sure we'll go on to in a wee bit.
So one of the things we've been chatting about is just the kind of history of the Lowlands. So let's get into a little bit of history about Kingsbarns. Tell us a bit about how you guys all started up there.
Yeah, so history of Kingsbarns. Well, we were originally actually the idea of a local golf caddy. He wanted to start a distillery. He's had his clients asking him after a round of golf, I'd like to drink some whiskey and go and see a distillery. And there was nowhere for miles around. I think the closest ones were maybe Glen Kinchy and Tully Barden probably. So they're both a good jaunt away from St. Andrews, home of golf. So he was actually the one, Douglas Clement, that had the idea to start a distillery in this old barn building. And he managed to secure a grant from the Scottish Government. And then it was really when the Weems family came into play, and they had an independent bottling business, Weems Malts, which was started back in 2005 by William Weems. So they already had knowledge and experience in the Scottish whisky industry. They had the contacts, and importantly, they had the funds to be able to back something like this, because, it's such long lead times before you get your product back, before you can get your product out, launch it, and then get some of that capital back. So you need a lot of backing, significant backing to start any distillery. So it was really when the Weems family came on board, which is, a Fife family, funnily enough, they really came on board and provided the backing. And then it was built in 2014 was when we were finished off. So it took a couple of years to build it, but it's a gorgeous old building. You've seen it yourself, Mitch, but lovely old sandstone walls. It's an old farmsteading. So you've got this old dewcot or dovecot where all the doves used to be kept for their meat and their eggs, and we've put our first cask in there. And it's a lovely wee distillery to work in. We're not very big, but we're very proud about what we are putting out and in terms of whiskey and showing people around as well. A visitor side of it's a big part of it as well.
I was just going to say that. I mean, it's absolutely stunning, not just the production side of things, but the way you guys have done the shop, the restaurant there. It really does cater for people going to visit the distillery, right? Which is and that's great to see with all these new distilleries that are opening up now. They definitely cater for that visitor side of things, which you guys have done amazingly well there.
Oh, thanks a lot, mate. Appreciate it. No, it's important to be able to show off a little bit of such a nice building and make sure that folk can come here and experience it and enjoy it. And, we're making gin here now as well. We've been doing that for a couple of years. We've got nice dinners sometimes throughout the year as well, so people can come across and have a dinner and a dram. So we're doing all sorts. Yeah,
I didn't know you guys were doing dinners. I look forward to the invite for that one, Pierre. No, I forgot about Darnley's as well. You guys do the whole Darnley's gin experience there, which is really cool. Do you get involved in that as well? Do you take people through that, or are you just whiskey?
Not myself. We've actually got a gin distiller, Scott Gowans, who does kind of handles that side of it. But no, it's a separate building. It's a little farm cottage that we revamped into a wee gin distillery. Even put in tiny little stills that you can distill your own. So make your own gin experience. So you come in, you get led through, what kind of botanicals do you want to use? And at the end of the day, you come out after having had a couple of cocktails, a tour of the main gin distillery, and then you get to make your own gin and come out with a bottle of that. So it's a lovely wee personal touch. And a lot of folk have actually, once they've made their gin, they love it so much that they'll put in an order for one of the team here to be able to make another bottle for them. It's a cool experience for a gift or something like that as well. Yeah.
So let's get away from this gin stuff. Let's get back onto the whiskey, Pierre, because that's what we're here for. So what does the average sort of day look like for yourself being the distillery manager there?
A typical day would be coming in, you know, getting everything started, getting the boiler on, getting the cooling tower running, making sure we've done all the checks. So we'll check the fermentations. We'll see what the, you know, what the gravities are like in terms of how much alcohol have you produced from every fermentation. And then we'll get the stills running and get the mash on. And it's a very, very busy start to the morning. And then you get a chance for a wee coffee break. And then throughout the day, you're just keeping an eye on everything and making sure it's all ticking over nicely. But yeah, we basically try and run to the same parameters every time. You know, now that we feel we've got the quality of the spirit right, the challenge now is trying to keep that as consistent as possible. And then you know, we can finally get it into casks as well.
Quite handy if you're going for a coffee break when you've got that nice little coffee shop on site. So that's pretty handy, right?
Yeah.
Pop over there.
Oh, indeed, yeah. Double espressos.
We coffee and a cake. Very nice, very nice. So let's talk about the whiskey that you guys have been producing, which I'm a huge fan of. So Dream to Dram, let's start with that. Tell everyone what that consists of.
Yeah, so Dream to Dram, in terms of the liquid before it goes into a cask, I think you tried our new make when you were here last, didn't you?
I did indeed. Make.
Yeah, so you'll know yourself, the new make is quite light, quite kind of red summer berry fruits. A lot of orchard fruit as well, which is what you get in a lot of new make spirits. But on the palate, you know, it's quite sweet. And then a little bit gingery as well, because, yeah, I mean, it's 63.5% is what we put it in at, and we sell the new make here as well. So that's what we're starting off with, is new make spirit. And for the Dream to Dram, we've got a wood policy of 90% first fill bourbon casks and 10% shaved, toasted, recharred casks from Portugal. So the bourbon casks make up the bulk of Dream to Dram. You know, that's the backbone to that whiskey. It really is. And bourbon casks, I think, just work superbly well with the King's Barns character, with that sort of style of whiskey. It just kind of rounds off all the edges, gives a wee hint of tropical fruit. I just think they blend so beautifully. But the STR casks is what provides a wee bit of interest. And these shaved, toasted, recharred casks are it's the glue that holds the dram together. And I mean that almost literally. It's a sticky, sticky, dark, rich liquid. It looks like molasses. You know, this whiskey, it's really sort of plummy and spicy. So if you just use 10% of that, you know, 9 bourbon barrels to 1 shaved, toasted, recharred cask, it adds quite a bit of depth to the dram. And I think that's maybe what gives us some of our kind of almost raspberry notes you can sometimes pick up, or perhaps even some of the more spicy finish to the tail end of the dram. You know, that sort of slightly later on in the palate, you get a bit of ginger in the finish. So that's really the makeup of the dram, and that's been our flagship whiskey and the favourite of quite a few folk amongst our range. Even though it was the first really, you know, publicly available dram that we've produced, it remains one of the firm favourites, and I think it's probably still one of my favourites.
Yeah, it drinks a lot older than it is, and you know, I don't know, you don't mind me saying that because you are a young distillery, 2014 when you guys started, but you know, I think it really does have some age to it. And to your point, I think that's the STR casks coming through and giving it, like you say, that depth and flavor at the end. I also get this nice sort of creaminess off Dream to Dram on the palate. Do you get that coming through?
Yeah, a little bit of kind of almost custardy vanilla, like a soft toffee sort of thing sometimes. But it's quite gentle, isn't it? There's nothing, it's got a lovely texture to it. As I say, it's quite a summery dram as well. I think it's one that you can imagine having in your back garden in a summer's afternoon, something like that, you know.
A wee highball. So you guys do a bit with highballs, don't you?
Yeah. It works, yeah.
And let's talk about the other expressions. So when we talk about King's Barns, we've got, I think you guys have got another 3, maybe 4 expressions out now. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, so we've done a few single casks, mostly ex-bourbon, and some of them have been superb as well. After that, what we've done is we've got one called Balcomie, which is our sherry cask maturation. So that's American oak, Solera system butts. So these 500-litre sherry butts have been used for sherry for quite a long time. And as a result, the sherry's taken out a lot of that sort of tannic wood sort of component. So it's, although it's, you know, these casks have only been used for sherry in the past, you know, their first fill, this dram, Balcomie, it's not a sherry bomb. It's still quite light, quite elegant. You know, these sherry casks, with everything that we're doing here, the wood policy has always been, you need to try and make sure that the spirit quality matches quite nicely with the wood, and that there's a lot of balance there. And then, of course, you get complexity through maturation. But it's trying to match the casks with the Kingsbarns DNA of that light, elegant style. So what you get in the Balcomie is a very, very light light touch on the wood. So it's, yeah, you pick up sherry, yeah, you pick up fruitcake, but it's not being decimated by by previous cask contents or by too heavy wood, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Still quite light, quite elegant.
And what's the future? You got anything exciting coming out that you're working on that you can tell us about?
Yeah, we've got something quite exciting coming out at the end of the month, actually. I don't think I'm allowed to say anything about it, but it's...
I'll just beep it out, mate. Beep it out.
Yeah. But that's going to be a tasty one. I've tasted it. It's something a wee bit different, yeah. We've had a couple of sort of limited editions as well, where we've played about with mixing sherry and bourbon casks, or we did a pure shave toasted recharred cask expression, which has been a really interesting one.
I remember that one. I think that one was so dark, wasn't it? I just remember it being like almost red, like mahogany sort of craziness coming through.
Yeah, completely preposterous whiskey. It's very, very dark, very rich. Some people absolutely love it. It's so that one sold out pretty quickly. That was quite interesting just to see what it was like after, you know, 5 years in these casks that have been shaved, recharred.
Last time we chatted, you said no peated within the system. You didn't want to go down that road. So I'm assuming that's going to be the same way, yeah?
Yeah. Quite a few folk have asked us, oh, you're going to do some peated malt? You're going to get a wee bit of smoke in there? But no, you're exactly right. I've always been paranoid about putting any peated malt through this distillery, because it'll take quite a long time to get that out of the plant, you know. It just takes quite a while, especially if you're making, you know, such a sort of a style of spirit that's all about these top fruit notes and doesn't have a lot of weight to it. And then, you know, it's going to take quite a wee while to get all of the peat out of the liquid. So we haven't opted to do that. But I know last time you were here, I maybe said to you we were playing about with ex-peated casks, so casks that have previously held, you know, Lefroy or something that's a bit more in the smoky side, shall we say? So we filled some of these casks with our spirit, and they're turning out really nicely. We've not released anything out of that yet, but it's. You get this lovely little thread of smoke coming through it. It's not ridiculous, but it's a really gentle sort of just a wee touch of peat. The casks that I've tasted, some of them actually taste kind of melonish, which is quite weird, and a tiny wee bit salty as well. So no, it's going to be fantastic to see a release when we finally do it, when we think it's ready.
Very cool. And it's, you know, because we were chatting about regionality and how that those lines are starting to get a lot more blurred now within Scotland. You know, Lowlands aren't necessarily always doing unpeated, and Islay's not necessarily always doing peated. So it's interesting to see those kind of experiments going on for sure with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the overarching kind of principle for us is making a spirit that's that's light and elegant and fruity, and we're trying to give the spirit it's put out for the core expression, something that we can stand behind it and say, you know, this is the King's Barnes character. But once we've got the core expressions out, then there's no reason, you know, why we can't play around a little bit and release something a wee bit interesting, a wee bit left of field, you know, a wee wild card here and there. But that's, for a young distillery, it's so important to try and establish who you are. You know, you need to let people know what you're all about. I don't think there's any point in coming out with all sorts of different expressions here, there and everywhere. You know, peated, cognac cask, whatever. If you spread yourself too thin, who are you? What are you all about? It's important to have some core releases that let people know that.
I think you're absolutely right, especially for a new distillery like yourselves. All right, Peter, well, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. Great to see you again. And I look forward to doing this in person at some point soon. I need to get back up there and have a few drams with you, mate. And
yes, please.
What's been happening. Dude.
I know, no, definitely. Aye. Come across when you're next over in Fifeland.
Absolutely. All right, Peter, we'll take care. Thank you very much.
No worries. Cheers. Thanks, Mitch. Bye.
So thanks again to King's Barnes for sponsoring this episode. And remember to check out our Instagram page for that giveaway that we mentioned earlier on. The other thing that King's Barnes are doing is if you go onto their website, which is kingsbarnesdistillery.com, order any bottle or bottles of any of the whiskies that we've been talking about, and then just put in NAWP5 as the promo code, you get free postage and packaging on any order that you put in. So another little bonus there from the King's Barnes guys. So Daz, what do you think for the next episode, man?
It's getting towards Thanksgiving, Mitch, and you've lived in America for a long time. You guys, I'm sure, must have celebrated that, probably still celebrate that. I also know it's a massive one for whiskey lovers. You know, I remember going over there at certain times of the year, and the build-up to Thanksgiving, the build-up to holiday season over there was just mad. But whiskey was a big part of it for a lot of the people who I was chatting to. We've also got quite a good wee following as well. A lot of our listeners, people that are tuning in from the States and things, have been sending us a few messages and things like that. So it just feels right that we should do a Thanksgiving episode.
Indeed, mate. Yeah, so yee-haw to that. So tune in, guys, for the next episode where we are going to go stateside, maybe have a couple of special guests from the US on board. And thanks for listening this time, and we'll check you guys the next time.
Thank you so much. So roast your turkeys, fill your glasses, and we'll see you soon. Cheers.
I like that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.